Hi, Nano.
Hey, Kira.
Oh my gosh, what's here? I feel like you always have a new background. That's so funny.
Ah.
What's this sign?
This one is the northern part of California near Humboldt. It's in Humboldt County.
Oh, okay.
I
Oh,
went
wow.
there, I went camping for my birthday, and the river is like behind this path. And I just thought, oh, this is a nice little, like, in the woods, redwood forest, all that stuff. So
Oh my gosh. When was your birthday?
August 28th.
Oh my gosh. So that just happened. Oh
Yeah.
wow. What does that make you? I don't know the stripe.
Virgo.
A Vir
Virgo.
Oh my gosh, a Virgo.
Yeah. What's your zodiac?
Pisces. So
Okay, my
very
dad's a Pisces.
emotional.
Yeah,
That's
my dad's a
like,
Pisces.
oh really? Is he emotional?
Not really. I mean,
I know, I was like,
I think he probably bottles a lot of it up, just to be totally honest. But
oh,
yeah,
I
he's
feel like
very
dads are
private.
like that. That
Yeah.
sounds like,
His
huh, Pisces.
birthday's February 25th.
Oh, wow. Is that, no, the 24th would be a cusp, right?
I think
I don't know how that
so.
works.
Yeah.
Oh,
Oh.
wow. Oh,
Hi,
dang.
Sharon.
I think she's still connecting. Hi, Sharon. Maybe a little longer.
Yeah.
Hi, Kira. Can you hear me
Oh,
okay?
hi.
Yeah. Did you want, I have a quick question. Did you want me to share your presentation on my end? Or did you want to share it?
I did make just a few cleanups on my copy of the slides, so I'm gonna point that out where it's relevant, but I did make a few cleanups on my slides.
Oh, okay. So are you going to be screen sharing then?
Yeah, would that be all right?
Yeah, no, that's fine. All right. We'll just wait for a couple more people to show up. I think we might need two more people to show up and then we can get started.
And Kira, is someone else from DPH presenting today as well? Like someone from health services or?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, you're the only presentation I see.
Okay. I'm gonna plug in my computer just so I don't run out of juice in the middle, so.
Hi, Na. Welcome.
Thanks.
Oh, hi. Oh my gosh,
I did.
did
Still learning how to style the bangs though. It's not
you
doing, it's like, you have the picture that you want and it's not like doing that, but also because I don't style hair.
a
And my stylist told me, she's like, short hair, you have to know how to style it. And I'm like, no, I can do it. I can do it. And I can't. And I'm lazy. But
This
this
is your
isn't
first
the look I
time?
originally wanted, but it's my I don't do anything look.
Oh, okay.
But it's like I like the little wavy hair look, and then the bangs are kind of like, like busy and messy, but I don't know how to style it that way. Anyway, that was the hope though.
It looks nice.
Thanks.
Hi, Matt.
Hello.
We're just waiting for one more person.
Is David joining today? No.
No,
Okay.
yeah, David's out for this week possibly.
Okay.
And so is Mark. So I'll be,
Yeah.
it'll
Okay.
just be me today. Sorry, everyone.
It's going to be a short meeting then. I figured it when I looked over the agenda. I'm like, well.
Okay. Oh, perfect. And Irma joined. So we can go ahead. Give me one second. Who is facilitating this meeting
I
actually?
am.
Manuel? Okay, perfect. You can go ahead and get started.
Chuck is out. Okay. Great. So I want to just say hello, everyone. Introductions and welcome. We do have a guest speaker today, Sharon Pipkin. So why don't we just do a round of introductions, and then we will go on with the agenda. So my name is Manuel Vasquez. I am the HIV Housing Programs Manager with the Mayor's Office of Housing in San Francisco, and I'm also co-chair of the Council Affairs Committee. Nah.
Hi everyone, Nolly with Marin County and council member.
Matt.
Matt Geldmaker with San Mateo County Council member.
Irma.
Hi, Irma Parada, council member.
And I think you know Kira, but Sharon, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi everyone, my name's Sharon Pipkin. I'm an epidemiologist with San Francisco Department of Public Health in the HIV epidemiology section.
Great. Happy to have you. Okay, the next item is to review and approve the September 12th draft agenda. Thank you, Kira.
Course. So
Okay.
here it is.
Great. If everyone's okay with that, we will approve by consensus. Great. Okay. And next, we will review and approve August 8th's draft minutes. If everyone's okay with this or no questions, we'll approve by consensus. Okay, great. Thanks, everyone. Announcements. Anyone have any announcements? Thomas is joining. Hey, Thomas.
Hey,
We're
sorry to
just
be
in.
late.
No worries. We're just going through the agenda. We've already approved the agenda and minutes. Now we're at announcements. I don't know if anybody has any announcements. No? Oh, you do, Kira? Okay.
Yeah, really quick, on Mark's behalf, if you have not done your service category prioritization, please get those back to him. I think they are due next week, Tuesday. So just a reminder.
Great. Thank you. I'm one of those people. Okay, great. Well, if there's no other announcements, public comment. I don't know if there's anybody here for public comment. So, okay. Okay, well, now we're going to introduce Sharon Pipkin, our presenter today, and she will be presenting the HIV Epi report. Take it away, Sharon. Thank you.
Thanks, Manuel. Hello, everyone. Thanks for your inviting me to the Council Affairs Committee meeting today. And I did want to preface today's presentation just by pointing out a couple of items that I communicated with Mark just a few weeks ago. This year, our HIV Epidemiology 2022 report is still in the revision and writing process at this moment, and that's due to the departure of our director this summer, which we're working through right now. And so much of the data that you're going to see in today's in the slides that you've received and in today's presentation is data that is from our semi-annual report, which was published in March. And this is all data that's been reported through the end of February 2023. So I just want to make that mention to preface that some of the content looks a little bit different. And we did also introduce some new content and features that we think would be interesting to this council. And of course, we're looking for a lot of substantive feedback from you today so that we can make the presentation appropriate for the full council. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. Okay, and because I'm in presentation mode, I'm not seeing hands. So Kira, would you mind just interrupting me if, or anyone on this call actually can just interrupt me if there's something that a particular slide you like to stop and dive deeper. Does that sound okay with everyone?
Yeah. I don't know if anyone else is not seeing this presentation yet.
We can't see you or the presentation.
Okay, let me try. Thanks for that feedback. Stop sharing. Okay, let me turn off my camera and then try this again, and then you can just shout out it to see if it's coming up on your screen.
It's loading.
Are you seeing any slide content?
No.
No, it's just saying you've started sharing your screen.
Okay.
I can go ahead and share on my end, Sharon, if that helps.
Yeah, thanks. I was just telling Kira right beforehand that there were a few places that I had, cleaned up and inserted certain things, but I will make mention of it and of where, where what I'm speaking about differs from your slides. And I think most of it is very similar. Okay. All right. Well, thanks again. So this is the title slide that you'll see a little bit differently on the day of the HIV summit. Next slide, please. To take you through what we're going to talk about in the next half hour or so, we're going to look first at new diagnosis trends and spend a little bit of time on focus populations, including older persons with HIV who are 50 years and older, and also persons who are experiencing homelessness. We'll move to the HIV care continuum. And then we're going to spend a little bit of time looking at age distributions and racial ethnic group distributions among persons living with HIV. We've put in here today some of the national HIV/AIDS indicators that are measured by Medical Monitoring Project, which is a supplemental surveillance activity that focuses on persons living with HIV who are accessing care. And finally, we have some information on trends in HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis and PrEP enrollment in San Francisco City Clinic. Next slide, please. So we'd like to begin with new HIV diagnoses, deaths, and prevalence from 2006 through 2022. And many of you are familiar with this epi curve and looking at the trends between diagnoses and deaths. But just to orient everyone, the red line is representative of annual new diagnoses. This is where the legend would be cleaned up in the presentation. And then the yellow line represents annual deaths among persons living with HIV. And finally, the bars that you see going across are how many persons living with HIV at the end of each year. So what you can see from this this slide is that new diagnoses, the red line, is showing to be stabilizing. When you look at 2020 to 2022, there's somewhat of a flattening out of that red line. And in 2022, we had 158 new diagnoses. When we look at deaths in the yellow line, deaths are increased in 2020 and then declined in 2021. And we're also seeing just very slight annual increases in deaths, which we believe is due to our aging cohort of persons living with HIV. And in a later slide, you'll see, that our persons living with HIV is really skewed towards older persons, 50 years and older. And then finally, because annual deaths started to exceed annual diagnoses in 2017, so therefore the count of persons living with HIV started to decline in 2017, and we're at just over 15,000 people. Those are persons who were San Francisco residents at diagnosis. When we looked at people who received care in San Francisco during 2022, that count of persons is 11,586. Next slide. We want to turn first to looking at the trends by gender and by transmission category. So first, we have this information presenting cis men by transmission category for the last 10 years. And each of these colored lines represents a different transmission category. You can see that men who have sex with men who don't inject drugs, represented by the yellow line, is still the most frequent for annual diagnoses in 2022. There were 92 MSM, and that accounted for 69% of cis men diagnoses that year. And that's followed by men who have sex with men who inject drugs, which is the pink line on the screen. Next slide. For trends among cis women, diagnoses among cis women is a much smaller number compared to cis men. And because of the smaller numbers, it's also subject to more fluctuation from year to year. So we show the brown line going across the screen. The brown line represents all cis women, and then also broken out by transmission category. Women who inject drugs and women who acquired HIV through heterosexual contact. So overall, you can see, again, a lot of fluctuation, but a decline in the last year that we're looking at in 2022. Cis women diagnoses declined to 14 for that year. And then for by transmission category, while there's not a whole lot that we can say about the pattern because the case counts are so small, but both women who injected drugs and those who acquired HIV heterosexual through heterosexual contact both declined in 2022. Next slide. For diagnosis counts of trans women, that number is annual number is even smaller. So we're not able to break it out by a transmission category. And when we look at the trends over the last 10 years, it really is a very similar fluctuating pattern every year, ranging from about eight cases per year, eight diagnoses per year, to a high of 13. Trans women diagnosed each year. And in the recent 5 years, you can really see that, it's a pretty even fluctuation in the recent 5 years. In 2022, we had 10 trans women who were diagnosed in San Francisco. Next slide. We turn to looking at the diagnosis trends by race ethnicity. And here I'd like to point out that each of the colored lines now represents a different racial ethnic group. And what we're seeing is that one of the features kind of halfway in between, halfway in the middle of this slide, is that in 2018, persons who were Latino, Latinx, those diagnoses started to exceed persons who are white. So previous, before 2018, you can see that white persons were the most frequent group of new diagnoses. And then in 2022, Latino, Latino, Latinx persons made up 42% of 2022 diagnoses. Next slide, please. Looking at diagnoses now by age group, now each of the age groups is represented by a different colored line. And here, what I'd like to point out is that the most frequent age group of new diagnoses throughout the last 10 years is the 30 to 39 age group, shown by that green line. And that there are declines in most of the age groups from 2013 through 2018. And then you kind of see this flattening out for some of the age groups, and maybe even a bit of a rise for instance, the 40 to 49 age group that's represented by the dark purple line. But more or less, if you look at the right-hand side of the figure, it does look like by age group, a lot of age groups seem to be flattening out somewhat with some fluctuation. Next slide. We wanted to spend a little bit of time looking at persons newly diagnosed who are in the age 50 years and older group. The way that this figure is laid out is that the orange bars represent the number of persons 50 years and older diagnosed each year, while that green line represents the proportion of all HIV diagnoses that year. So you can see that in terms of the number of older persons diagnosed, that has come down a little bit from 2014. We had 53 persons, and that's generally come down more. And in 2022, we had 25 persons who were 50 years or older. And what it reflects in terms of percentage of new diagnoses is that we saw this kind of steep, a very sharp rise in 2019, with older persons accounting for 20% of new diagnoses. And that's coming down very gradually, a little bit each year. And in 2022, they made up 16% of new diagnoses. Next slide, please. We wanted to show information in a similar format for persons experiencing homelessness, which is another group of focus that we're spending a lot of resources and prioritizing. And again, the blue bars represent the number of diagnoses who were homeless when they were diagnosed. And then the orange line tells you, you know, what proportion of all diagnoses were homeless and we don't see too huge differences in number of diagnoses. It's every year it's ranging between about 28 people to 45 people in this time range, but you see a really sharp trend in the proportion of new diagnoses that are homeless. And that, increased pretty dramatically all the way through 2021, where we measured about 23% of our new diagnoses were homeless. And that's since come down in the subsequent year to 18% in 2022. Next slide, please. We wanted to characterize some of the demographic and risk differences between persons who were homeless when they were diagnosed versus people who are not experiencing homelessness. So again, this captures the diagnosis that you just saw in the previous slide for 10 years. And the features we want to point out among people experiencing homelessness in that middle column is that women, cis women, and also trans women had higher proportions among the persons who were homeless at diagnosis. Another feature is that persons who injected drugs were shown to be at higher proportions. 27% of persons who inject drugs and 22% MSM who inject drugs. And by age, it was a pretty similar features, not a whole lot that were, you know, dissimilar, but we wanted to point out the gender and the risk category differences. Next slide, please. When we account for health insurance status at diagnosis, this is for the last 5 years of diagnoses. And overall, for people diagnosed in this time, 69% were insured either with public insurance or private insurance during this time period. So in my version of the slides, we would have a call out for that. And here, you also see it broken out by racial ethnic group, gender, and also the year of diagnosis. So on the left-hand side, we see that white persons and Black African-American persons had higher percentages who had insurance. Oh, I see Matt raising his hand.
Hi, yeah, just a quick question, because this gets confusing a lot of times within the Planning Council. So when we do ARES presentations on people with no insurance, where do you put people with Healthy San Francisco? Are they no insurance or are they any insurance? How do you define that?
They're in any insurance.
Okay.
And
we count that as no insurance in ARES because it's not portable.
Yeah, it's not a, I hear what you're saying. It's not a standard form of what we would consider insurance.
Yeah. So maybe just to point that out in the that what means, what does any insurance mean? What it does that entail?
Okay. Includes. Do you think the audience would find it helpful to even see how many are Healthy San Francisco?
I was just thinking that
in particular.
When Matt asked the question, that was my next question. Like, okay, what, not percentage, but what's the N?
Okay.
For me, I don't know if others feel the same.
I think more information is better. I mean, if we have the numbers, that would be helpful to have.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's definitely, thanks. Thank you for pointing out that that definition is important. So we'll add the Healthy San Francisco numbers, and we'll also make mention that any insurance defined here also includes Healthy San Francisco or people participating in the Healthy San Francisco program. And after highlighting that whites and Black African Americans had higher proportions of having health coverage when they were diagnosed, we do also want to point out that Latinx persons had the lowest proportions insured, and with over a third of persons diagnosed, so 34% of them did not have any insurance when they were diagnosed. Moving to looking at gender, cis women and trans women had higher proportions with health insurance compared with cis men. And then by year of diagnosis, the percentage insured ranged between 64% and 72%, with 70% insured in among 2022 diagnoses. Next slide, please. So just to summarize some of these different trends that we've looked at in the first part of the presentation, the total diagnoses in San Francisco decreased in 2022 by about 5% compared to 2021's diagnoses. And then by gender, diagnoses for cis men increased in 2022 with decreases in men who have sex with men who inject drugs, while men who have sex with men who don't inject drugs increased in 2022. And overall diagnoses for cis women decreased in 2022 with declines in persons who inject drugs and also persons who acquired HIV heterosexually. And then proportion of people who are 50 years and older being diagnosed, that proportion declined starting in 2020. For persons who experienced homelessness, they accounted for 18% of 2022 diagnoses. And that's down a little bit from 23% in the previous year. 55% of persons experiencing homelessness diagnosed in this last 10 years were people who injected drugs. Next slide, please. So in between the next topic where we'll cover the HIV care indicators, wanted to give a little bit of information of what the age distribution looks like for persons living with HIV by different racial ethnic groups. And here we're highlighting that there's really large differences by racial ethnic group, with whites having a very large number of persons living in the 60 years and older group and the 50 to 59 years. And you can see how skewed that is towards older persons. For Black African Americans, somewhat of a similar pattern. They make up much fewer of our persons living with HIV, but you can see certainly more higher numbers in the 60 plus and the 50 to 59 age groups, whereas among Latinas, and this would be corrected, Latinas, Latino and Latinx persons, the age distribution is younger, with 50 to 59 year olds being the most frequent, but you can see really a shift towards younger age groups, and similar with Asian Pacific Islanders. Okay, I'm gonna stop my video and go to the next slide. Here we're looking at, now we're going to shift into HIV care indicators. We're looking at care indicators for new diagnoses from 2017 to 2021. And each of the colors, colored bars represents a different year of diagnosis. And each group of bars going across the slide looks at a different indicator. So we're looking at, linkage to care within 1 month of their diagnosis. And then in the middle, how well we retain people in care after their linkage. And then finally, on the right-hand side, we look at viral suppression in two different ways, like how, what proportion of people were suppressed at 6 months and also at 12 months after diagnosis. So in the first group of bars, when we look at linkage to care, we're generally seeing, improvements by, increasing proportions. So increasing from 81% in 2017 and to 94% of diagnoses in 2021. And for retention and care, that really ranged between 64% and 72% each year. And then finally, for viral suppression, that darker portion of the bar with the hatches, that represents viral suppression at 6 months, which is what a lot of folks are looking at now. And you can see some declines from between 2019 and 2020. So a decline from 79% to 75% in the last two time periods. And we think that is in part due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the limitations in accessing testing and routine HIV care starting in 2020 and persisting into 2021. Next slide, please.
Oh, I have a quick question.
Yes.
Is retained in care defined by like the labs within like 3 months apart? And is that how you define it?
Yes. Yes, that's an excellent question. So for that time period of 3 to 9 months, we're looking for like, did they have more lab testing in that time period after their diagnosis date? That's how we define it. Does that help?
Yes, that helps. That's because that's different than how we've defined it. So that's helpful.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. I know there are many different definitions of retention. This slide is also looking at new diagnoses, but in a slightly different way and in a much more compacted time period. So here we're looking at diagnoses from January 2021 to June of 2022. And we're looking at diagnoses in 6 months chunks of time periods. And now, instead of the colored bars representing years of diagnoses, they represent the different indicators. So the yellow color represents linkage to care within 1 month, and the green color represents viral suppression within 6 months. So when we look at just 6 months of diagnoses each time, we're not seeing huge differences in this compacted period of time. And linkage to care within 1 month is ranging from 91% to 94%. And viral suppression at 6 months is ranging from 73% to 81%. But in the most recent time, January to June 2022, we're showing like 81% of people are virally suppressed. Next slide, please. We'd like to give you a sense of trends in viral suppression among all of our persons living with HIV by the end of that year. So this is a little bit new and different than how we've looked at it in previous years. And what you're seeing here is what we measured from 2017 to 2021. And we're using the latest test in that year, so the last viral load test a person had in that year. And showing that we have between 71% and 75% of persons living with HIV virally suppressed. It certainly was just a little bit higher in 2017 to 2019, and that dipped to 71% in 2020 and in 2021. Again, we think that has something to do with COVID-19's impacts on our health system and accessing care in those years. Next slide, please. Looking at viral suppression, again, in a slightly different subgroup. So this is medical monitoring project and persons living with HIV in medical care during these years. So this is people who are recruited to participate in an in-depth interview and also have their medical records abstracted. And when we look at all of the participants in these years together, we saw that there were really high levels of viral suppression, and we looked at it in two different ways. What was their most recent viral load suppression? Was that suppressed? And also, were all of the viral loads in their previous 12 months of the interview, were all of those suppressed? And we found that 80% of participants had their most recent viral load suppressed. So that was encouraging. And then beyond that, if that subgroup of people who all of their viral loads were suppressed in the previous 12 months, that was like 3/4 of participants in MMP. Next slide, please. using medical monitoring and Project MMP data again, we turn our attention to some of the indicators that are also of interest for meeting the national HIV/AIDS strategy. So in this table, we're looking at unstable housing, unemployment, and food insecurity in the 12 months before a person's interview. And we've looked at all these years from 2015 to 2021. For unstable housing or homelessness, we found that the proportion of participants experiencing that in the previous year ranged from 19% to about 25%, about a quarter of people. And for unemployment, in the third column, again, kind of a fluctuation from year to year, with about 13% in 2021 reporting that they had experienced, they were either unemployed at the time of their interview or had some period of unemployment in the previous 12 months. And then for food insecurity, not any particular pattern emerging, but about 14.5% of people reported, you know, they lacked food. They felt hunger or couldn't acquire the food they needed because they didn't have enough money sometime in the 12 months before their interview. Next slide, please. Another feature that was important for understanding some of the unmet needs in the population. We looked at unmet needs for mental health services during the 12 months before interview. And again, we're looking at trends in people who reported having unmet needs in that aspect. And we saw that there was fluctuation between 17% and 28% of people in a given cycle year said that not all of their mental health needs were met. In 2021, that was 17%. Next slide, please. And finally, we want to round out the presentation with some information about PrEP enrollment. And just deliver some information about what trends we're seeing. So we're going to look at PrEP among eligible men who have sex with men by race, ethnicity, age, and also what regimens MSM are enrolling into. So by race, ethnicity group, here each of the bars represents a separate racial ethnic group, and then we're seeing increases across most racial ethnic groups in PrEP enrollment at City Clinic all the way through about 2020. Persistently though, starting with 2017, Black and African American MSM are not enrolling, not using PrEP, at least in this, not at the same rates as other racial ethnic group counterparts. And so you can see that blue bar is persistently lower than the other racial ethnic groups represented here. Next slide. When we look at the same group of people and PrEP use, but by age, this time each of the colored bars represents a different age group. And what we see as we, trend, as we look towards the more recent years, is that PrEP is being used by people in younger age groups. There's really good uptake in the younger age groups, all the way up through 2020, and then that's somewhat flattening out. And MSM who are 55 and older, they were persistently the group that had lower percent using PrEP. Okay, and then the next slide, please. And then finally, we wanted to give some sense of what prep enrollment was like for different regimens that San Francisco City Clinic is offering. So they gave us data for 3 years, 2019 through 2020, and looked at people who were using daily prep, which is kind of considered the more traditional regimen. It's oral Truvada versus PrEP 211, which is PrEP that's taken around times of sex. And what we're seeing is that, you know, from 2019 to 2021, we have a very modest, slightly growing proportion of people who are electing to use PrEP 211. So that increased from 6.4% of people enrolled in 2019 to 8.6% in 2021. And we expect that group to be, you know, to continue to grow based upon PrEP 211's convenience. And so it's good that there's more than one regimen being offered and that there is growing enrollment in the newer regimen that's being offered as well. So that is my final data slide. And most of the information that I presented here can be found in the 2022 HIV Epi semi-annual report. And that is available on our website. And I'm happy to email out that semi-annual report to this group as well. So thank you very much. And I'd like to leave time to answer your questions and suggestions. Thanks, Manuel.
Hi, thanks Sharon so much for that presentation. I did have a question. So do you happen to have a number handy of how many people are HIV positive that are homeless by chance?
Yes. Great. Oh, number of all persons living who are homeless in the last time they reported their address or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, any figure that you have. The reason I'm asking is because we are MOCD. We usually do HIV housing plan, and we're gearing up for that. And so people will be reaching out for data sets.
So, yes, we do have an estimate of that. You can see from the presentation and probably other presentations you've seen that unstable housing is defined, you know, pretty differently from group to group. We have an estimate of persons who are recently homeless or also in less stable housing, like a SRO. So we could include that. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Do you have the number just off the top of your head right now?
No. I have it from. Yes, I have it from last year's report. And it's probably, we would say it's probably an underestimate because we don't have address information for everyone in the most recent year. So we would probably report a proportion of people to sure. you.
I've worked with Susan Buchbinder before around this data, and she mentioned that.
Yeah. So at the end of 2021, we reported like people who were ever homeless or in an SRO in 2021. We measured about 555 people, but again, that data comes with limitations. We would say it's probably an underestimate.
Sure. Okay. Thanks so much, Sharon. Are there any other questions, everyone? Thomas?
Just for Sharon, that was excellent. I've been hearing these reports forever, right? And concise, to the point, and I really appreciated how you kind of explained the N versus the percentage. I thought that was kind of critical with regards to being able to kind of hear the data and understand what's going on there. I had two questions. One was specifically around kind of intersectionality, and the way that I'm kind of interpreting what I'm seeing is Latino MSM seem to be faring the worst, for lack of a better word. Is that kind of a fair summary?
So because Latinos make up such a large proportion of our new diagnoses, we are inferring that maybe there's some limitations in PrEP delivery, PrEP uptake, and also you can also see some disparities by the health insurance numbers. I did consider should I put a couple of slides in here that just focus on Latino, Latinx persons, and I wanted to ask the group before I inserted something that focused on that particular group.
I appreciate the question. Is it fair to kind of say that though, Latina women, Latina trans folks, or Latina unhoused folks, are or Latino people who inject drugs, also not faring as well, or is it specific to MSM? Would be my first question, or to answer your question. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So we can think about including some data around the indicators like linkage to care and viral suppression. From last year's data, we didn't measure that many intersecting features for Latinx persons, but for Latinx persons in general, just going to report the viral suppression. For new diagnoses, we did not detect that Latinx persons fared worse in terms of viral suppression and linkage to care. We also did not detect that they fared worse in linkage to care. So indicator wise, they were, there wasn't anything that kind of rose to the surface for Latinx persons overall. And if we did a deeper dive where we looked at characteristics just among Latinx persons, that might be where we would see differences. Yes, Mark, I see your hand up around this.
I guess to answer, to directly sort of answer what you're asking earlier, as far as I'm not sure if Thomas was suggesting this, but a slide that in particular notes the challenges of the Latino Latinx community would be great. This is actually the target community of our needs assessment as well. And it's interesting, from the preliminary, I wouldn't say findings, but certainly the preliminary findings that Kira learned from this one support group, access to care was actually not that not a challenge, but certainly your data portrayed other challenges. I'm not sure if your data portrayed challenges around homelessness or around drug use, but certainly if those are particular challenges, that could be in that slide too. I really do like the idea of a focused slide on a community that's in particular need, even if that need is only around PrEP. I mean, wherever the disparities might be, if you could somehow highlight that, it would actually just really well parallel our needs assessment also.
Okay, great. Thanks. Then I will certainly, include a couple of slides around that. And just wanted to make sure that was okay to highlight.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Sharon.
Can I how do I say this nicely? The PrEP slides started to blur together for me a little bit. So I think kind of the first slides with regards to trends, I was able to follow, and then the care stuff, and then the prep stuff, I was started to fray. But I don't know if anybody else kind of had that or found that particular information. You're shaking your head. No, Manuel, you were still with it. Okay, great. Maybe it's just my attention span.
I'm also the facilitator.
That's helpful feedback, because I think some of the slides look really similar. So maybe we could try to arrange it, you know, sometimes different colors or orientation might just make things look a little fresher and help highlight things. Yeah.
Add a beat, some kind of music background.
Which you're going to throw down right in the middle. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you so much, Sharon. We still have a few more minutes. Does anybody have any questions before we move on? No? Okay. Thanks again so much, Sharon. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Manuel. Really appreciate you and this committee.
Of course. Okay. So it looks like we now have the Ryan White Part A resource allocation vote. There are three different items.
If I can jump in. Yeah. Unfortunately, I wasn't at the early part of this meeting. There's one other, hopefully, sort of brief discussion I'd like to add to the agenda regarding November's presentations, actually. And as that's under this committee's purview, it'd be good to have that discussion centered around them later. So whether you want to do that now or before I go over the resource allocation scenarios, that's up to you.
Sure, let's go for it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I'll maybe start with a question to Thomas. So for our October meeting, we do have a full-size presentation, which is our annual San Mateo presentation. That's often, you know, regular size presentation. So that will not be a shorter one. And then we also have a cluster detection presentation. I assume, Thomas, and now correct me if I'm wrong, that presentation is also a regular size presentation. If it's a smaller one, like say 15 minutes, then this might be a moot point. But if it's a regular size one, per our discussion at co-chairs, we're going to have to do a little bit of moving, and this committee will have to decide which presentations it wants to see in November, since the goal is two presentations rather than three if they're all like regular size. So I guess starting with Thomas, I assume this is a regular size presentation that should allow for Q&A, and I'd say about like 20 to 30 minutes for the presentation itself.
Are you all there?
Yeah. You're frozen in a very thoughtful. Oh,
sorry. No, I cut out for a second. I cut out there for a second, Mark. It's a full presentation, I would say.
That's what I figured.
I hate to say that. It's just a complicated thing, and we want to make sure we do right by the.
That's an interesting topic as well. I wouldn't want to shirk the amount of time spent on Q&A either. All right. So then for November, we already have scheduled two presentations: Getting to Zero Semi-Annual Update, and HIV and Incarceration. Marin County presentation. So we already have three. One of those is immovable, and that's NAS. That has to happen because there has to be a vote to affirm their prioritization and resource allocation. And so the one that is being bumped from October is Megatrends. I'm not sure, Manuel, if you've seen Megatrends before, but Megatrends is often what is happening nationally or statewide that's impacting us locally, as well as local trends. So there's already one in November, and we can have one to two more, probably just one more, because these all sound like regular sized presentations. So those are Getting to Zero, Megatrends, and HIV Incarceration. Of those three, I'd say Getting to Zero does come annually. So in some ways, is eminently bumpable, unless people are like, no, we need to have that annual Getting to Zero updates important, which is fine if that's the case. HIV Incarceration is a new topic area. We have not had a presentation on that topic area or from the new FAP at all. So that's an exciting one in some ways, as far as like just being a new topic area. I think the last time we had a presentation on that topic was way back when we used to be at the AIDS Foundation. So that's like 7 years ago. And then
Mark, when am I?
You're next month, my friend.
Huh?
You're in October per usual.
Okay.
For every year. Don't front. Anyway, it was Na who had the special circumstances.
I want special circumstances.
No, friend. And so that's sort of your choice. Getting to Zero, Megatrends. Also, Megatrends is also an annual presentation. So if you're looking at things that appear before us regularly as potentially skippable, and certainly Megatrends and Getting to Zero are both regular annual presentations. I get to reach out to anyone besides letting, you know, we've talked about this at co-chair. So certainly the two people who'll be doing Megatrends, Thomas and Bill, are aware. But I haven't reached out to anyone as far as HIV incarceration or Getting to Zero. So it's not like we'll be hurting anyone's feelings either. But you all, I think, will need to choose one of those three to be the second presentation in November.
So are we thinking that Megatrends, are we doing it in January, Thomas?
That could be March? That's what Thomas brought up as far as potentially just bumping that to January.
To January.
I mean, it makes sense. It's an annual presentation, and it could either close out the year or frame the new year.
Yeah, I'm flexible with whatever on that, and I think Bill is as well.
So why don't we just start with that? Sort of like let's push Megatrends to January, but that leaves a choice then between HIV incarceration and Getting to Zero. You can do the same with Getting to Zero if you'd like. Could also be a backup if Getting to Zero seems like will always come. It could also be a backup if I reach out to people from HIV incarceration and don't hear back. I mean, that sometimes happens with new presenters. How do folks feel about, not that I'm pushing any particular direction, but because it is a new topic, HIV incarceration and Getting to Zero, if that one doesn't work out?
Yeah, I'm more interested in the HIV incarceration topic.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we can always bump Getting to Zero to like February or March, you know, fairly early in the year. Okay, cool. That was it. I have my marching orders, and we'll have November be Marin and hopefully HIV incarceration. And if they are unable, then we'll do a Getting to Zero.
Mark, when would the cluster detection and response?
That's October still.
Oh, Julia can't make October.
Oh, a recent email from her colleague said that she can do it. So I forget the other person in that email. I could look it up right now and tell
was
you
it who. Stephanie or was it Aaron?
No, I don't think it was Stephanie. It was Lizette.
Oh.
Lizette can take this on. It was offered. Mia Chin just talked to Lizette Durand. And who both on the email, obviously.
Okay, and
so
listen
to what you're doing.
Thank you. Great.
Thanks, Mark. Did you want to go over the resource allocation motions?
Yeah, absolutely. So these are recommendations from the Community Engagement Committee, and I'll put them up on the screen in a moment. But just to preface this, because these are all virtual committees at this point. These are not motions that are now on the floor. They're merely recommendations. So after I go over them, if you want to keep as is, someone will actually have to move and another person will have to second. Of course, you can also change and update as you see fit. As you all know, we need to provide HRSA scenario, resource allocation scenarios for both the potential of increased funding, flat funding, and decreased funding, which is the most likely of the three, although we actually have received increased funding recently. So as we'll see here, the recommendation coming from Community Engagement for increased funding is really straightforward. It reads as follows. If increased funding occurs, service category resource allocation will be increased proportionally across all categories. Any discussion about this recommendation? Not a motion on the floor again. Not a motion on the floor. If there's no discussion, and it sounds like then there's no suggestions for a substitute recommendation. Would anyone like to move to, I guess, put this forward as a motion to approve?
I motion to approve.
Okay, Matt, is that you're raising your hand a second?
Yes.
Okay, so this does involve money quite clearly, so I'll have to do a roll call for each of these separately. Irma Parada.
Yes.
Nali.
Yes.
Matt Geltmaker.
Yes.
Manuel Vasquez.
Yes.
Thomas Noble.
Abstain.
All right. So that recommendation carries, and the recommendation that will now move to membership. Flat funding, again, incredibly straightforward motion. It's also quite statistically improbable that we will receive an exactly flat funding, a flat funded amount, but still we have to provide that scenario. If funding remains at the current level, service category resource allocation will remain level across all categories. Any discussion or any suggestions to update or change this? All right. Can I hear a motion to approve it?
Motion to move.
Manuel moves to approve this recommendation, and Matt is seconding again. And we're going to be doing another roll call vote. Manuel Vasquez.
Yes.
Thomas Noble.
Abstain.
Matt Gelnicker.
Yes.
Nali.
Yes.
Irma Parada.
Yes.
All right. Our last scenario is for decreased funding. This is the most complex of the three, but also it should be familiar because this is the motion that appeared in prior years. Not last year, it was a slight tweak last year, but in prior years, this is the motion that has appeared. This is also the most likely funding scenario for us to be reacting to. The decreased funding scenario that's being recommended from community engagement reads as follows. In the event of decreased funding for the first 10% of reductions, allocation for services that are covered under California's essential health benefits package will be reduced proportionately. If further reduced allocation is required, reductions will occur proportionally across all service categories. We'll see here that there is an asterisk that leads down to the bottom of the page that specifically names those service categories that are actually covered under California essential health benefits package. So the logic here, as it has been in prior years, is that this will mean that if there is a cut of up to 10%, it will come from those service categories that actually are able to use other funding sources to pay for services. And then beyond the 10%, that's when it's sort of it is quite clearly a equity model, a proportional model of everyone shares the pain. All right. First of all, this is more complex. Are there any questions about this recommendation? Manuel?
I have a question. And so if we said no to this, it would just be that we would have to get together again and kind of devise something different than the first 10% of reductions as it's kind of listed. Is that what I'm understanding?
No, because okay. This is actually not a motion on the floor. If you all do not want to pick up this motion, what would happen then is that you would have to come up with your own motion. Okay. And then the next committee membership would have a decreased funding scenario from community engagement and a decreased funding scenario from council affairs. And so they could pick and choose between those two or come up with their own third scenario, in which case steering would then have three scenarios to deliberate on. So it's kind of a choose your own adventure, I suppose, if you decide to not honor honor in a critical way, but not honor the recommendation coming from community engagement.
Okay.
Matt.
That's me motioning.
All right. Is there a second to Matt's motion to recommend?
I second.
All right. Any discussion on this decreased funding recommendation that's now on the floor? All right. Now we're going to do our final roll call vote. Nali.
Yes.
Thomas Noble.
Abstain.
Manuel Vasquez.
I abstain.
Irma Parada.
Yes.
Matt Gelmaker.
Yeah.
All right. So that is quite a close shave of a recommendation with the two abstentions, which of course count as no's for those of you who do not know that.
We had two abstentions.
Three in favor, so it does pass.
Me and Thomas abstained.
All righty, so all three of these will then be ported over magically by Kira to membership on Thursday. Kira, you feel comfortable portraying these three All righty. Thank you all.
Thanks, Mark. Okay. Well, that was a pretty quick meeting today. We're already at 4:08. So the next item on the agenda is next meeting date and agenda items. So the next Council Affairs Committee is scheduled for October 10th from 3 to 4 p.m.
As far as the agenda goes, we should hopefully have Matt with us. And Thomas, I guess I'll be reaching out to that new person.
Lizette,
to hopefully provide us a presentation in advance.
Sounds good. Julia just sent an email asking about a December meeting. I'll let you talk.
Matt, I'm sorry. Mark, could you repeat what you said? Because for some reason, we lost audio and couldn't hear you.
Sure. As far as what I just said, for next month, Matt will be on the agenda to go over the San Mateo presentation in advance, as he knows, as he does every year. And he does such a fantastic job. He doesn't even need to hear this. It's like, what do you call that? It's like muscle memory at this point.
Obviously, it's not, though, if we're all asking, what's happening in September? What's happening in October?
Obviously, it is, Thomas.
I assumed it was October. I've already spoken with my epi.
Obvious.
Okay. Well, was that it, Mark, then? Is everybody?
That was it.
Only like the
unless Thomas has any more comments.
Anybody have any questions or announcements? I will go back to what Kira mentioned in the beginning, service allocation voting. Mark has been sending out those emails as reminders. I just sent mine. So, yeah. Okay, well, if there's nothing else, I will move to adjourn.
Bye, everyone. Nice seeing you.
Thanks.
Great. Good job, y'all. Bye.
Bye, everyone.